All right, welcome back to the Weekend Warrior Podcast presented by WTP Sports. This is episode 33. I am your host, Pat. Unfortunately, Mike is not here tonight, but that's okay. We still have a great show for you planned. We do have Phil Perry coming on from NBC Sports Boston. You see him on TV, you read his stuff on the internet, and now you're going to hear him on our show and hear what he has to say. So that's a great interview. You don't want to miss that one. And we also had some listeners that had questions, and we figured instead of me just talking for 40 minutes, we might as well have some listeners call in and you hear some different voices, hear some interesting questions, and we kind of have a good back and forth. So stay tuned, and we hope you enjoy. All right, so we're really lucky on the show. Phil Perry is joining us from NBC Sports Boston. He is a reporter, but he's also on Football Fix every Friday night. He's on Quick Slants occasionally with Tommy Curran, and he's also on Boston Sports Tonight as well with the myriad of people that are on that show. That's like, what, 8 to midnight or something like that? That's a ridiculous
amount. 9 to midnight. 9 every midnight. Night. It gets a little skewed sometimes when there's a Celtics game, but pretty much every night. Monday through Friday, 9 to 12.
Yeah, my goodness. So a lot of work. But anyways, thank you for coming on the show. We appreciate it, Phil.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, and we'll get started really with the Steelers game. I mean, you know, hyped is the biggest game of the season and really kind of played that way. Any big takeaways from the game for you?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, there are a couple. And the first, honestly, that I would take away is that the rest of the conference – you see why the Patriots are the favorite, and they're the favorite to make the Super Bowl this year, and they're the favorite just to make it just about every year as long as they're relatively healthy. This year, they're missing really key pieces on both sides of the ball, but when you look at all the dysfunction that was just so apparent, both on the field and on the sidelines especially, for the Steelers at the end of that game, I think you come away from it saying, okay, you know what? I feel pretty good about the Patriots' chances, even if the Steelers are the more talented team, because the Patriots just have their stuff together better than everybody else. The Steelers team, it's a Steelers team that it's, you know, they're supposed to be smart. They've been there before. They've won Super Bowls. And they still screw it up and essentially choke away home field advantage through the playoffs just because they weren't ready. And so I think that honestly, to me, is the biggest takeaway.
Yeah, it's really mind-blowing. I mean, and I do want to get into the Big Ben play, but, you know, even after the game, you know, Big Ben blaming his coaches, and then Haley saying he called two plays before they went back onto the field, but then they weren't ready for the second play. It's just like, no one knows what they're doing, and everyone's pointing fingers at one another, and it's just like, what are you doing? It's just, it's crazy. I mean, I've never seen it like it before.
And some of the video that you saw coming out today from the Turning Point program that NBC Sports does, NFL Films puts together, you know, Tomlin, actually, I give him credit. You know, I'm not the biggest Tomlin fan. You know, I think it was probably a mistake on his part to not want the timeout that Ben Roethlisberger was asking. Do we call the timeout? Do we not call the timeout? Tomlin didn't want to take a timeout there. Tony Corrente, the official, gave them the timeout. But I think that was actually probably a smarter move. It felt like to me, Tony Corrente was probably, you know, probably made the best decision for the Steelers in the last 2 minutes than anyone that was actually a part of the Steelers franchise made for themselves. But Tomlin clearly says in one of those videos that's circulated now, you can find it on Twitter, but he goes to Haley, standing right next to him. He says, if we get tackled inbounds, we're running a play. We're not clocking it. And he checks with him a couple of times. You understand me. You got me. Haley says, I got you. So what happens? Malcolm Butler tackles Darius Hayward Bay inbounds, and they have no idea what they're doing. It was astonishing, the level of dysfunction, the confusion, and for them, especially, I would say, after the Jesse James review, like they were gifted essentially another timeout. They had all that time on the sidelines to try to figure out every situation. Okay, if this happens, let's do this. If this happens, let's do this. And then on the next snap, we're going to have this ready to go. It sounds like, according to Roethlisberger, at least from Roethlisberger's perspective, he was just on the side. He was on a knee, catching his breath, praying, taking it all in. Oh. Just no no preparation whatsoever for what was about to face him.
Unbelievable. It really is crazy. And it's funny because I think a lot of people are drawing conclusions or comparisons to the Super Bowl 49 game where the Seahawks had the ball at the goal line and just totally blew it. And we've said on the show before, we did a whole thing about, people that basically you think it was one way when it's actually another way. So a lot of people blame the play call on second down for the Seahawks losing. We basically say it's really the clock management that led to that play that really screwed them. You know, and they called two timeouts with the clock stopped on that last drive. And one of them being the curse play. And it's like, you have all that time, draw up two plays. Don't wait for Belichick to call a timeout. Run up to the line if you don't get in. And now Belichick has to call a timeout. And then you get the time in between plays. And then you call two plays again. And you run up to the line. And it's the same thing with Pittsburgh where it's like, you need to have a second play. And by the way, I agree with Tomlin 100% where you should have ran another play there. Because why not? Like, take a shot at the end zone. If it's not there, just throw it away. Because what's the worst that can happen? You know, like, I mean, we saw the worst that could happen, but if your quarterback's done
this, they had plenty of time. You're right, they had plenty of time to run a play.
Right, right, and that's the thing for me, and so it's funny where it draws comparisons to the Super Bowl 49 play, when I think that the clock management really is kind of the same as you look at it right at the end of the game, that clock management screwed them both times.
Right, and how often do we say it where, you know, whether it's Bill Belichick saying, well, you have to first learn how not to lose before you can win, or how often we just look at these teams and they just totally puke on their shoes in those critical moments of the games. You know, these are extreme examples, the ones we're talking about now, Seahawks and Steelers. But you can go right on down the line, whether it's turnovers in big spots, it's an inability to execute in the red zone when, you know, a team's been moving it, you know, with relative ease. Those are the sorts of things that teams, for whatever reason, against the Patriots, I don't know if they get in their own heads or if it's just one of those things where, you know, it's the law of averages. Like to keep it close with the Patriots, you have to, you know, for some of these teams, maybe they're just guessing right for a good chunk of the game and then they lose their minds at the end. I don't know, but it happened again against the Steelers there.
That's crazy. And speaking about the Jesse James play, what do you think about that call? I actually wrote a blog about it and they've gotten a lot of comments on it and just about like people disagreeing and arguing. I know it's been a big talking point for a lot of people saying it should have been a catch, which I think, you know, if you look at the rules, and I guess, you know, what a lot of people argued basically with me is that if you look at the actual rule book, you can argue that he had possession of the ball, but the way they interpret the rule, he's clearly falling down the entire time. He has to maintain possession through the ground, even if he turns upfield as he's falling down. What do you think? I mean,
that's the biggest part of it. If you're falling as you're securing the football, as you're making the catch, you have to maintain possession through contact with the ground. And there's another part of the rule. There's like a little article, you know, I think it was section 2, article 7, item 2, or we were all over at the night of the game, which is just ridiculous. You know, whoever reads the rule book like during the week, I probably should be, but you aren't. You're checking these things after they happen.
Yeah.
And you have to, even if you're going to the ground and you have your feet underneath you, you have to be on a catch. You have to remain upright long enough to be considered a runner, which is very ambiguous and vague, but you have to be upright long enough to be ruled a runner before you can say, okay, I do have possession. This is possession. So there was an interesting play that actually involved the Steelers earlier this season with their tight end, Xavier Grimble, where he catches the ball going down the seam and he loses his feet. And so he's falling essentially as he catches it, but he's still moving forward. And he does something where he reaches down with his free hand and he kind of keeps himself up with that hand for just an extra split second and he tucks the ball away and he falls into the end zone and he loses possession. But it was ruled a catch and a touchdown, and I think they ruled that correctly because he was a runner. He was considered a runner. He was upright long enough to be a runner, that once he crossed the plane, that was a touchdown. Like, it was not, he was not still trying to complete the catch. he probably moved a good 10 or 12 yards. Right. So they ruled, okay, he had the ball. He had made the catch. He was a runner. He put his hand down. He tucked it away. He puts it over. As soon as it crosses the goal line, whether he drops it or not, that's doesn't a touchdown. Matter, the case with Jesse James was obviously different. So I think they got it right. I don't mind the rule. I think the rule is fine. You know, the important thing is the league has to make a point as to, okay, we are going to say possession starts here. It can't be an eye test thing. It can't be. I heard Jim Rome on the radio the other day say, how about this? Whenever a guy catches the football, let's rule that a catch. It's like, okay, Jim, that's a great idea. I like it. I like the premise. But then All of a sudden we have this thing. It's called instant replay. We have slow motion instant replay. We have HD replay. If you just start to use the eye test or you just want to say, well, he caught it, that's a catch, every time somebody gets two hands on the ball and they wrap their fingers around that thing and it gets smashed out of their hands almost as soon as it hits their hands, that's going to become reviewable. You're going to have, as Bill Belichick put it the other day on the phone, you're going to have a million fumbles a game because You're going to say, well, if we go back and we replay it, you can see his fingers start to grip it here. And so he has possession, and then it's knocked out immediately, so that's a fumble, and you're going to start getting game-changing plays that way. So there has to be – you have to have a certain point in time where you can reference and say, the catch starts here. I know it's annoying, and I know it looks strange at times, but the league has to do it, and I think it is pretty clear now. I think everybody understands the rule, and so to me, I feel like they should keep it unless there's a better suggestion out there. I just haven't heard one yet.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I mean, I feel like – I feel like it makes as much sense as it can. You're trying to make sense out of a difficult situation. And, exactly. You know, I mean, there's a million different things that happen. You look at the OBJ catch a few years ago with Butler knocking it out when he went to get it. And, you know, there's A million different examples. You know, the Calvin Johnson one, the Dez Bryant one. You know, it's like, you know, who knows what it is. But at the same time, a catch is a catch. Like, it has to be the same for every single play. And I think that's the only way you can do it is to say you have to become a runner or at the very least, you know, maintain possession to make a football move. You know, I mean, that's the only way you can do it.
And survive the ground. That's the other strange-ass term.
That's awesome. I think it's great.
It's just – I mean, it's good in that everybody remembers it, and the players should be able to remember it. And So, you know, do you feel bad for Jesse James? Like, really, I don't, because I know he was trying to help his team. He was trying to win the game. But you have to know the rules. And so, You know, there's a critical area to be messing around with possession of the ball.
It's true. Very true. So, getting away from the Steelers, do you think there's any chance they lose either of these two games coming up, Buffalo and New York at home?
I really don't. I mean, the fact that Gillette Stadium is huge, the Bills, though they've won two of their last three at Gillette Stadium, which sounds nuts, they've never beaten Tom Brady at Gillette Stadium.
It's a little different. Yeah.
Last year it was Jacoby Brissett. So until they prove that they can play a little better against Brady in Foxborough, you have to assume this is going to be, I won't say a breeze, because the Bills, they have a shot at being a playoff team here for the first time since 1999, which is amazing. So they have something to play for. They're going to be hungry. I know people are talking this week about the revenge factor. You know, they're going to try to get back at Rob Gronkowski. I honestly don't think that's going to factor in, because I think if they really are keen on making the playoffs here, you know, a great way to shoot yourself in the foot and make sure that doesn't happen, or at least lessen your chances of that happening, is for you to be picking up things like personal foul penalties because – you know, the whole hood wants Rob Gronkowski. I just don't see that happening. And I also think Sean McDermott is a guy who has, you know, a good head on his shoulders from what I know of him. I've had a chance to talk to him a couple of times. And I do think he's a smart guy. I think he's kind of going about this whole thing the right way. There's been a definite culture change, in my opinion, there. And it would be hard for there not to be when you go from Rex Ryan to Sean McDermott. Yeah. But the fact that he's been willing to get rid of players, whether it's Marcell Dareus or Sammy Watkins, he brought in a bunch of veterans from some winning teams. I really do like the direction the team's headed in. Oh, and there's the great move they made, which is really Belichickian in some ways, where they trade down in the draft this year. They pick up an extra first-round pick. They end up with, you know, arguably the defensive rookie of the year in Tre'Davious White. So they've done some really smart things there, and I don't think they're going to be a team that loses its mind at Gillette Stadium. And so I do think it will be closer than maybe some people are expecting, but I think this should still be a game where you're looking at it in the fourth quarter and it feels relatively secure. They just have no weapons up offensively.
Yeah.
I think that kills them. You got to be able to keep pace with Brady in this offense, and I just don't think they're going to be able to do it.
That's true. Good point.
That's I mean, LeSean McCoy. We can't forget LeSean McCoy.
Of course, yeah, but he's a running back.
Receiver-wise, like Kelvin Benjamin, I know is a talented guy, but he's been banged up for a good chunk of the year. I don't think he's 100%. And Charles Clay can be good in spurts. Bill Belichick freaking loves the guy,
yeah.
But he has been inconsistent, so I just don't trust that offense.
Right. Okay. And is there anyone you're like, I know, afraid of? Is you know, but is there anyone you're like nervous about in the playoffs? Outside of the Steelers, I guess, because the Steelers are the obvious choice,
yeah,
right? But is
no, the Steelers are the obvious one because if they get Brown back, like you know, I was talking about this with Edel and Zolak earlier this week, I guess. If Antonio Brown comes back, is he a 3-point player? Like you know, it's a 3-point game. I know it's in Pittsburgh, and so that would you know that maybe would change things, or it certainly would change things, in my opinion. If the right. game was in Foxborough,
yeah.
But if they can get Brown back, you know, that's a different game, in my opinion. It just plays out a little bit differently. Listen, I know this sounds a little nuts. It sounds less nuts now because people are starting to come around on the Jaguars, but I've been saying the Jaguars for like the last month or so, and it's just because of that defense.
Yeah.
You know, Blake Bortles has played better of late, and I know, I think it was today, he sounded a little bit salty, you know, about people saying that he's playing like trash.
I don't blame him.
Trash. If it's trash, yeah, that's fine. I'm okay with it. He's been playing well lately. I don't trust that that will continue. I think Blake Bortles kind of is who he is, and I just go back to some of the joint practices that the Patriots had with the Jaguars earlier this summer, and we talked to Blake Bortles after the first couple of practices, and he was talking about being confused by Patriots coverages, and like this is like the second week of training camp, essentially.
Yikes.
The Patriots are running maybe – 3 or 4 coverages total, all of them pretty basic, and Blake Bortles couldn't figure them out. And so I just think there's a block there for Blake that's going to hurt him in the playoffs. But when you look at that defense, if they're all healthy, and I think they have a couple guys who are pretty banked up right now, but if they're healthy, that's a defense that could give the Patriots a lot of trouble, because I think it's a defense that could get pressure on Tom Brady, they could get pressure up the middle, they can get pressure from the edges, and then they have corners who can play man. And we know that has been
the equations
that's been the blueprint, yeah, so to speak, to beat the Patriots, at least when Rob Gronkowski's not in there. Obviously, right, things are different with Gronk back.
True. Very true. So then my last question is a hypothetical question, and so stay with me here. It's been maybe a little bit.
I like this. Yeah, it's right.
So, yeah. So, you know, everyone's talked about Brady, whether Brady or Gronk is more important and who's more important and whatnot, but I'm going to just switch it up a little bit, and I'm just going to say so you have to take out either Gronk or Brady, but you can replace them with anybody in the league. So, like, you can replace Brady with any other quarterback. You can replace Gronk with any other tight end in the league. Who do you have where do you have a better shot at winning? Like, if you replace Brady and kept Gronk, or if you replace Gronk and kept Brady. But remember, now I know the Patriots won the Super Bowl last year without Gronk, but
yep,
it's the team as constituted. So no Julian Edelman.
No Edelman.
So, you know, so anyways. And by the way, guys that are hurt, like I don't – other teams, you can take guys that are hurt. But the Patriots is as constituted.
I may get killed for saying this, but I'm replacing Brady. Let me ask you this.
Yes.
Can I replace Brady with a healthy Aaron Rodgers?
Sure can.
If he's not healthy right now.
Right. Yes, that's what I'm saying. You can – we'll cheat a little bit and say you can replace him with a healthy Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, sure.
Would I? Boy, that's a great question.
It's tough, right?
There's just nobody. There's nobody. I'll say this. I think the gap between Brady and the next best quarterback is smaller. And who is the next best quarterback, I guess, right now? So Wentz is out. Let's play it true, right? As true as this hypothetical can be. No Wentz, no Rodgers are both on IR.
Yikes.
Who would be the next guy? Would it be
Case Keenum?
Man, Russell Wilson's been killed. You know, like,
yeah.
I think he's had a great year because that offensive line's been so horrid that what he's done is really impressive.
I mean, maybe
could you win with Russell Wilson? Could you win with Russell Wilson and Gronk?
Maybe.
Versus Brady and Travis Kelce.
Yikes. Yeah, I mean, that's tough. It's a tough question, right?
Like, honestly, here's my answer. I think if Aaron Rodgers is healthy, I replace Brady. But otherwise, I replace Gronk. Because I just think Rodgers is that good. And if he's available, you get him. But if he's not, that quarterback position's it's too important. And even if you have somebody like Russell Wilson or another Pro Bowler or borderline All-Pro, it doesn't matter. I would rather have Brady. Right. That's my final answer.
I like
if
it.
I can have Aaron Rodgers, I'm taking him.
I like it.
But otherwise.
Well, you know what's interesting is that there's the Belichick factor in it, right? It's like, you know, it's hard to judge Aaron Rodgers. I look at Aaron Rodgers and I'm like, well, he has one championship. But then at the same time, Mike McCarthy's his coach. So, like, is he not winning the playoffs because of Aaron Rodgers, or is he not winning the playoffs because of Mike McCarthy? And so I'd be hard-pressed to take Aaron Rodgers because – it just seems like he always loses in the playoffs. And like I said, that could be coaching.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know. I mean, is he just one of those guys that can't win? Like, I feel like I'd take Russell Wilson over Aaron Rodgers. In my opinion, in big games, Russell Wilson over Aaron Rodgers. And I don't know. I mean, I might take Russell Wilson with Gronk.
With Gronk. Instead of
Instead of Brady with Kelce, because Kelce's like the second best tight end, right?
Yeah.
But here's the problem, though.
It's a fun question. Yeah.
But here's the problem. Does that mean then that Brady goes to Seattle, and then you got to play freaking Brady in the Super Bowl? Which then it's like, well, then forget it. You know? You're coming. Right.
And you get Pete Carroll on the sideline saying, he's not as good as my buddy Drew. Yeah, it's great. I will say this: I've spoken to Brady about Rodgers before, and just how closely he watches him. You know, he's at a point, Brady, now where his mechanics, you know, are really his own, and that's the case for every quarterback. But he knows his own mechanics so well that he wants to just hone those and refine those. But he watches Rodgers in terms of how he moves in the pocket. What he does at the line of scrimmage, how, you know, that offense moves the ball down the field.
Right.
And to Brady, this is Brady's, like, this is essentially, I'm going to try to boil down what he said about Rodgers, but he was like, to me, he's the most efficient quarterback in the history of the league. Like, he is so praises Aaron Rodgers absolutely up and down. Like, that guy, you know, Brady, I'm sure, removing himself from the conversation, like, it sounds like if you could be a quarterback, you would want to be Aaron Rodgers. So I default to Brady. Brady knows what he's talking about when it comes to quarterbacking. So if Rodgers is available, and you're right about the, you know, the clutch moments, you know, I guess I don't know every little coaching decision well enough to know if that's, you know, McCarthy or if it's Rodgers just, you know, choking in a bad moment, or if it's the defense not putting him in a good spot.
Right.
But Rodgers is just a wizard to me.
Yeah. All right, I like it. Well, thanks
that's
for coming
a good
on.
Question. That's yeah, a you put my brain into a pretzel there for a second there.
Well, that's I wanted to kind of mix it up a little bit, you know?
I like it.
So, nice. All right, well, stuff. Yeah, thanks for coming on, man. We appreciate it. Now, you are on Twitter is it Phil A. Perry, correct?
It is. That's okay. It. Yep.
So make sure.
On Twitter, @PhilAPerry. On Instagram, same thing, @PhilAPerry. And thanks for mentioning all the shows off the top. Appreciate that. Yeah, we got Quick Slants Tuesdays at 6 o'clock. Football Fix is Fridays at 6 o'clock. We do some fantasy. We do some gambling stuff on that show on Fridays with me, Beetle, from the Beetle and Zolak program on 98.5, and Casey Smith, who's one of the hosts for Boston Sports Tonight. So We have a lot on that show. It's a little bit looser. Trying to have some laughs on that show. So check us out there.
All right, nice. Now, if you could talk to the producers and maybe get those shows a little bit later, so those guys with kids can actually watch those shows.
You got to catch the replays. So we replay.
Yeah, good point.
So we got some like 8 o'clock replays every once in a while. 8:30 sometimes. You'll catch Football Fix. I believe we've been using lately as sort of a pregame to our pregame live show, which is usually a couple hours before kickoff. So you should be able to find it. I know six Friday at 6 o'clock is kind of tough, like happy hour. People are still getting home from work, but all kinds of ways to watch that thing.
Yeah. All right. I like it. Well, thanks again, Phil. I appreciate it, and maybe we'll talk to you soon.
Definitely. Anytime. Enjoy the game this Sunday, and Merry Christmas.
Thank you. You too. Merry Christmas to you.
Okay, so before we get you into the listener phone calls, I did want to just talk to you again about RotoSurance. Again, RotoSurance.com. If you're playing fantasy sports and you're not using RotoSurance, you're not doing it right. RotoSurance is insurance for your fantasy football team, for your fantasy players in any sport. So it could be football, could be baseball, could be basketball, could be hockey, right? Now, right now, you're playing basketball, you're playing hockey, you're playing football, okay? With our promo code WWP, you're getting 20% off. If your player goes down with an injury, you're getting your money back. I played fantasy football for free this year, for free. This year, because of RotoSurance, I insured Allen Robinson at the beginning of the season. He went out. I got my money back. It's that simple. He gets hurt. The guy you insure gets hurt. You get your money back. It's really that simple. They have DFS right now as well, Daily Fantasy Sports as well. If you're insuring guys on Daily Fantasy Sports and you're not using RotoSurance, you're not doing it right. If that guy gets hurt during that game, I believe it's a half. If he misses a half because of injury, you get your money back. If you had insured Antonio Brown, you put money into Daily Fantasy Sports last weekend, and you thought Antonio Brown was going to kill the Patriots last weekend, and you put him in a bunch of leagues and spent a bunch of money on it, if you would have insured him, you would have got all your money back. And maybe you still would have won. Who knows? Maybe you would have done such a good job picking that you would have won anyways, but you would have gotten your money back anyways. It doesn't matter whether you win or not. In my one of my leagues, I'm in the championship, and I'm still getting my money back from RotoSurance. They don't care that I'm in the championship. They only care that I insured the one guy on my team. Well, not the one guy on my team, but one of the guys on my team that got hurt. I get my money back. End of story. So you absolutely cannot beat it. RotoSurance.com. And again, the promo code is WWP for 20% off. And because we're talking about DFS, Daily Fantasy Sports, WTP Sports has actually partnered with FanDuel to give you the absolute best daily fantasy sports experience. You're going to go on to FanDuel.com/WeThePeople. That's all undercase, We The People. And when you sign up, you're going to get entry into two free games. Okay? Not only that, it's not just that. You're not just getting entry into two free games. If you put $100 or more in, now let's be honest here. Okay? It's a long year. Right, we're talking about football, we're talking about basketball, we're talking about hockey, we're talking about baseball. It's going to go all the way around until you come back to football again. You're going to spend $100 or more. You're definitely going to spend more than $100. So put the $100 in to start. If you put the $100 in to start, or more than $100 in to start, you're going to get entry into four, not just two, but four free leagues. You absolutely cannot beat that. FanDuel.com/WeThePeople. Okay, so we're going to get the listener call segment started here. Just wanted to give you a heads up. They do come in pretty rapid fire. I recorded them separately and then stitched them together because, frankly, you have better shit to do than listen to me talk between each phone call and try to segue into the next one. You just don't need to do it. So they come at you pretty quick, pretty rapid fire, but get in and get out, and let's go and hope you enjoy. So our first listener calling in today is Juliana. Juliana, welcome to the show, and why don't you tell us your question, please?
Well, thank you for having me. So I want to talk about my favorite Boston sports team, which is the Red Sox. And my question is about Alex Cora coming up on his first year as a new manager with the team. I was just wondering kind of what your thoughts were. It's, you know, he's a young manager, and while it's great that he's familiar with the Red Sox organization, does the fact that he was so recently a player and actually was a teammate of Dustin Pedroia's, how will that play into his management of the team and the clubhouse chemistry?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. It's one of those questions really that you kind of look at from the beginning, and you're looking at first-time managers. And not just first-time managers with the ball club, right? Because both Francona and Farrell both won World Series in their first year as manager of the Red Sox. But when you talk about first year as a manager, period, really there's not a lot of success there. The only difference there is 2001, Bob Brenly was the manager of the Diamondbacks, and they actually won the World Series that year. That team was stacked. I mean, they had Schilling and Randy Johnson on that team. They were disgusting. And it still took them, you know, that bloop single from Luis Gonzalez to knock off the Yankees in 01. And so, really, I mean, to me, I think the clubhouse chemistry is an interesting situation. It is going to be interesting to see how he handles Pedroia, especially where I feel like lately Pedroia has felt like not a great leader for the team. I really felt like, you know, my opinion of him has gone down significantly since really the last few years. I mean, you look at the situation with Machado last year and, you know, when Bobby Valentine was there and he, you know, Bobby Valentine was trying to call out players and he was getting in Valentine's face for doing that. And, you know, it just, it really kind of wonders what type of guy in the clubhouse Pedroia is now. And now, especially when you got a guy that was his teammate coming in to be the manager, you know, I think it's an interesting situation. That's why Tommy Lasorda is here. That's why, you know, they're trying, Tony La Russa is here. You know, I think that's part of the reason why is because of that clubhouse chemistry and because you want a respected name in the room so that, you know, they can't just kind of say, yeah, whatever, Cora, whatever, who cares, you know. But I think really what it comes down to more than chemistry is their talent. You know, and you see what the Yankees are doing in New York and, you know, regardless of who the manager is here, I don't know how you could pick the Red Sox as the favorite at this point, you know, unless they make some more moves. So the clubhouse chemistry will certainly be interesting to take a look at because you never know. I mean, look at 2013 and 2004 was the same type of thing. I mean, they had great players in 2004, maybe not such great players in 2013, and their chemistry was just so good that they were able to win. You know, whether that will be the case or not will be interesting, but they're probably, I mean, unless they make significant changes, they're not going to be the best team in the AL East, at least on paper. So they're going to need that clubhouse chemistry if they really want to win the division this year, I think. So,
awesome. Well, thanks so much. Yeah, I completely agree. I'm hopeful, but kind of holding back a little on being too optimistic.
Right. Well, you know, it's his first year, and as long as, you know, as long as you can see some improvement, and really, I mean, the big thing to me is improvement on the young guys is really kind of my biggest issue. And as long as he can improve those guys, that's the future of the team. That's really where the team is going. They have a lot of really good young talent. And so you get a young guy in the clubhouse that can speak Spanish and talk to these guys. And I think that that's going to be important. And if he can do that, I think that that will be a win, even if, you know, they don't win the World Series or even the division for that matter. It'll be a win if he can kind of develop those young guys.
It's a good foundation year.
Exactly. So thanks for calling in. We appreciate it. And maybe we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Pat.
All right. All right, so the next person, next listener we have on is Steve. So thanks for calling in, Steve. We appreciate it. And what's your question?
Hey, yeah, so the last 2 weeks, of course, reminded us something we all know, which is the way the roster is right now, this Patriots team, you know, losing in Miami, winning that crazy game in Pittsburgh, that other than Brady, the one guy we can't lose is Gronk. And, you know, I know all the talking heads, and I get the logic of what they're saying when they say, don't worry, the Bills need this game. They want to stay in the playoffs, so they're not going to try to do something stupid crime. But these are all the same reporters and talking heads who always will say, the Bills will be the Bills. They're always going to screw up. They're always going to do the dumb thing to lose. So how do I reconcile those two things? Because I'm sitting here, I just think the Bills are going to be the Bills, and one of those guys is just going to be an idiot and try to take out Gronk. What do you think?
Well, I tell you what, it's a great question. And actually, we Phil and I talked about it earlier in the show, just briefly, and you know, he was talking about a culture change this year with Sean McDermott, and again, he said, and I'll agree with him, it's pretty tough to not have a culture change when you're going from Rex Ryan to anybody else, you know, but you hope, at least, that the Bills are going to be a little bit different this year. It is a huge game for them, and even if they don't win on Sunday, they still have a chance to get in the playoffs, depending on what the other teams do. And, you know, if you've got guys on the defense that are, you know, taking shots at guys and possibly getting suspended and things like that, it's just not it's not conducive to you winning that game or the next game. And so, you know, it's not something you want to do. I mean, you never know, especially with the Bills, and the Bills have always kind of been the stepbrother to the Patriots and whatnot. And so maybe they're just pissed about it and they want to take it out. But again, I look at to the play when it happened. Right, Gronk jumps on the guy's back when it happened, and there were like four other defenders there, and they just kind of stood there and pointed at him. So that no one chased him down, no one jumped him, no one was fighting him. And even after that play, during that game, there was no retaliation from anyone or anything like that. And so I think, you know, White, when he came out and said, you know, the whole hood want him or whatever, I mean, I think that's a little bit of a hyperbole. I know that probably his buddies were pissed about it and people were saying, oh, you know, screw Gronk or whatever. But I think in between the white lines, yeah, people will go hard. I don't know if they're going to actively try to hurt him. But it is a question. I mean, it is a question mark. Gronk is the type of guy that can get hurt if you go low on him, or, you know, you hit him the wrong way or something like that. And so it's definitely a concern. To me, if the Patriots get up two or three touchdowns, which I don't know if they will, but if they do, I'm yanking Gronk the hell out of that game. I'm yanking Brady the hell out of that game, because you just don't need it. You know, you don't even want to take a chance at, you know, someone being stupid like that. And like I said, I don't know if these guys are like the typical Bills, but, you know, why take the chance if, you know, if you feel like you're going to win the game and it's pretty much in hand, why take the chance of allowing them to even do that, you know?
Absolutely. So, all right.
You gave me a little bit of hope. Yeah, let's hope. It'll be maybe their Christmas gift to the Patriots. They won't cheap shot anyone. So
thanks.
So we'll see.
Taking the call.
Yeah, thanks for calling in. We appreciate it. All right. So next up, calling in, we have Dave from Florida. He's actually been on the show with us before. So welcome back, Dave. And what's your question?
Well, I was wondering if you had any thoughts on what decision was worse, more egregious, however you want to say it. Roethlisberger deciding to throw that god-awful pass this week, or in Super Bowl 49, the infamous Malcolm Butler pick. I don't know, like, if you think they're the same, similar, different, who you thought was worse. And I know one cost them the Super Bowl, but I'm just talking about, like, purely on the decision itself to make the throw.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's tough, right? It's tough to overlook that fact that Wilson obviously lost the team in the Super Bowl. But at the same time, from the decision-making point of it, Lockett was wide open, right? And Butler came from behind him, which they never expected to happen. Matter of fact, Wilson came off the field and was like, what happened? He was wide open, and then all of a sudden it was picked off. And so I think the decision-making part of it maybe isn't so bad on Wilson's side of it. Also, it was a called play from the sideline, as opposed to the Roethlisberger play, which almost kind of looks like he was freelancing, and then they come off the field, and he's pointing fingers at Haley, and Haley's pointing fingers at him. And, you know, Phil Perry talked about it earlier, but, like, Tomlin, I get they do a special, like a mic'd-up special on NBC Turning Point every week, and it's like, you know, Tomlin is telling Haley, if we get tackled in bounds, we're running another play. So, like, be ready to run another play. So whether Haley had something called and Roethlisberger ran something different, or whether that was the, like, nobody really knows, right? At least with the Super Bowl one, you know that it was a play call, and he ran the play that was called by the coaches, and the Patriots just executed it to perfection. And so maybe the decision wasn't as bad, even though it cost them the Super Bowl. I mean, I don't know, you know?
Yeah, in and of itself, like, if you can somehow, you know, separate the fact of what it cost. But I think I agree. I think Roethlisberger probably made the worst decision, because just nobody else was doing anything. At least with Russell Wilson, he had 10 other guys doing what they were supposed to do with him. And then it was just scouted out too well.
Right. Well, that's the thing, right? The Patriots scouted it out perfectly, and they had seen the play, and they had seen what was going to happen. And the same thing happened with Roethlisberger, by the way. I mean, they knew that the fake spike was coming. If you watch the play, right, Richards goes, or McCourty actually puts Richards into the passing lane as he knew that there was a quick slant coming. So, you know, to me, it's, you know, the coaching from the Patriots is kind of second to none there. I think what's interesting about it is that, you know, it's really just one of those interesting situations where the clock was mismanaged so bad by the opposing team that you're just like, you really are that stupid that you can't figure the clock out? Right. And we've talked about it on this show before about how, you know, about how the Super Bowl 49 was all on clock management and not necessarily on the play call there. But yeah, it's an interesting question. And there's a lot of parallels you can draw from both of those games. I think the biggest difference to me is that Pittsburgh was going to tie the game and go to overtime if they didn't score a touchdown there, whereas Seattle was going to lose the game if they didn't score a touchdown. So, you know, again, another one that kind of points in Wilson's favor, where it's like they had to score a touchdown whereas Roethlisberger just throws it away and you know, and it, and it's good to go. So, you know, that's the way it goes. But so, anyways, I think that's it. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think the other thing that's kind of bugging me more about it is, like, the decision was horrible and stuff and all this, that, and the other, but everybody in Pittsburgh had something to say about it, and they're saying it. Roethlisberger has come out to the media and said something. You know, you hear what Haley has to say. You hear what Tomlin has to say. Whereas, you know, being a New England fan, you're used to getting nothing, and that's about it. And I think I prefer nothing if the alternative is all the crap that Pittsburgh is spewing.
Right, well, that's the thing, right, is that, you know, the first chance they got, it's like everyone's throwing each other under the bus. It's like, Jesus Christ, I mean, are we a team here or what? Like, everyone's just getting thrown under the bus immediately. So, yeah, it's shaky at best, for sure, you know? So we'll see. Well, thank you, Dave, for calling in. We appreciate it, and I'm sure we'll be talking to you again soon, I hope.
Yes, definitely.
All right, sir. Have a Merry Christmas, my friend.
Thank you. You as well.
Thanks, brother. All right, so next up we got Chris calling in. We appreciate you calling in, Chris. What's your question?
Thanks for having me on the show, Pat. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Just wanted to know, simple question. What's your problem with Jackie Bradley Jr.?
No, I don't necessarily have a problem specifically with Jackie Bradley Jr., but the Boston sports fan in general kind of does have a problem with Jackie Bradley Jr. I don't mind him as my ninth hitter. I don't want him as my sixth hitter. I mean, that's the biggest issue I have with Jackie Bradley. I mean, he's a fantastic defensive outfielder. But realistically, I mean, you're not winning games based on your defensive outfield. And so there are guys that you can, I think, get that would be better than him. Or there are guys you could get. Like, if you were able to get a Stanton, you could put Benintendi or Betts in center and then put Stanton on your outfield. And now, all of a sudden, your outfield is significantly better than it was before. And so I don't know if it's necessarily a problem, well, for me at least, I don't know if it's necessarily a problem with Jackie Bradley Jr. per se. It's just the fact that we see the potential of a better outfield being a possibility, right? I mean, if we can get J.D. Martinez and put him in a corner outfield and then put either Benintendi or Betts in center, then I think our outfield is better than it is right now, because I think that guy, you know, that Martinez is better than Jackie Bradley, and I think most people would agree with that. I think the hate for Jackie Bradley is unwarranted. I think, well, really what I think happened is that people hyped him up, like he was going to be this great player, and he was going to be unbelievable and an all-star every year, and it's like, that's just not who he is, right? He's going to hit 240, 250, and hit about 20 home runs a year, which is really good for like an 8th, 9th hitter, but he's just not a 6th hitter in a lineup. He just doesn't do enough of it, you know? At least in my opinion, that's kind of my opinion of it. I think to me, more the guy that deserves more hate is Xander Bogaerts, because I just can't. I'm just over him not hitting for power and only hitting for average and being subpar defensively. Maybe not subpar, but being defensively. And you know, he was the guy. He was the guy you couldn't trade anybody for. And now he just looks like another guy, you know, at shortstop. And so, again, maybe it's expectation-wise, you know, and he's not a bad player. It's just he hasn't lived up to the expectations that everyone had for him. You know, but I think that's really my issue with both of those guys. Again, I would be happier to trade Bogaerts than I would to trade Bradley, because I feel like you're going to get more for Bogaerts than you would for Bradley. And Bogaerts, I think, is going to command a lot more money than Bradley would, on the open market at least.
All right. Now, I know you're big on Benintendi. Do you think he's that much of an upgrade from Bradley? Do you think Benintendi's that much better than Bradley?
I think Benintendi's significantly better than Bradley, yeah.
You think so, or he just has the potential? I'm not very high on Benintendi the way other people are. I feel like very athletic, not great defense. He can do some things with the bat. He is younger than Bradley, but I don't see his ceiling as high as everybody else is seeing his ceiling. I know he's not number one prospect and whatnot, but I just feel like Jackie Bradley Jr. and Benintendi, I don't see much difference between the two, to be honest with you right now.
But look at his flow, man. I mean, the flow alone.
Flow.
You know?
I know. I know. Great here. But not a great outfielder.
Yeah, I mean, defensively, you're right. Defensively, it's not even close. Bradley's 10 times better than he is defensively. But just offensively, I think Benintendi, you know, hits for a better average, has more power potential than Bradley does. I think he hit more home runs than Bradley this year anyways, although that might be wrong. But, you know, and so I think, and he's younger, like you said, and so I just think, to me, I look at it and just say, you know, if I'm starting a team now and I have to pick one or the other, it's a no-brainer for me that I'm taking Benintendi and not Jackie Bradley. So that's my take on it. But I do understand your point. I mean, you know, I think, as I said, I think he's unfairly hated here. I really do. He doesn't deserve it, you know. But again, I think people want him to be an all-star when he's a good player, but he's just not great. You know what he really is? He's really like a fourth outfielder on like a World Series team. I really feel that way. Like he's a ridiculously good defensive outfielder and he hits pretty good in spurts. But so when he's hot, you can kind of put him in there. But when he goes cold, man, he'll go like 0 for 35 and you're like, Jesus Christ, you're killing us, you know? And so, you know, the inconsistency for me is, you know, the hot and cold is tough. And so I think if he's a fourth outfielder on a World Series team, then holy shit, now you talk, you know?
Oh man, I got to stop you there, Pat. This is where I think I got my big problem with Red Sox fans here is you've kind of turned in everything you've hated about the Yankees. I mean, Jackie Bradley Jr. is a very serviceable outfielder on any major league team, and it seems like you guys on the Red Sox want him as your fourth outfielder. I mean, he's going to start on probably 28 out of 30 major league ball clubs, if not all 30. And you guys are complaining that he should be a fourth outfielder on a World Series.
No, now wait a second. You just said that he's going to start on 28 of 30 teams. That leaves two teams he's not going to start on, which means one of those teams probably be in the World Series. Right? I'm saying in a perfect world.
30 out of 30 teams he's going to start. 30 out of 30 teams. Maybe the one team he might not start on is someone like maybe the Astros, maybe somebody there.
Right.
He's going to start in center field in pretty much every major league, I would think. Almost every major league baseball team. I just feel like, you know, listening to the Weekend Warrior podcast over the past few weeks, that I'm telling you, you guys sound a lot like Yankees fans on here. Not the old good old Red Sox fans I used to love.
Yikes. That's you cut me deep there. That's about the worst thing you can possibly say to a Red Sox fan. So, but, you know. That's all right. I understand. Well, it's coming from a Blue Jays fan. We got to remember. I mean, the people got to know this. It's not coming from another Red Sox fan. It's a Blue Jays fan. So, you know, I will say that success breeds contentment. You know what I mean? The people want to be perfect every year, and you can't expect that. It's not realistic. You know, I do think if you added J.D. Martinez to this team, that he would be the fourth best outfielder. I mean, I think there's no question about Betts. There's no question about J.D. Martinez. And I think, in my opinion, there's no real question about Benintendi, especially when you talk about he's so much younger. And so then to me, well, there's no choice. He has to be the fourth outfielder. And again, that's not saying he's not a very good outfielder who wouldn't start for most teams, if not all teams, but I could find three outfielders legitimately that could start on this team if you add a guy like J.D. Martinez. And so, you know, if you have him as your fourth outfielder, now you're talking about you have the best outfield in Major League Baseball, if that's the case. And so, you know, but you're right. I do understand that at the same time, it's like we want the moon and everything else, right? And I get that. So, but, you know, that's the way it goes. That's what we want. We want to win every year in every sport. It's not good enough to just win with the Patriots.
I guess John Farrell knows that best, right?
He certainly does. He sure does. Yeah, win the division. We don't care. That's great. See you later. Get the hell out of here. We want to win a championship. So
I know. First Sox manager win three divisions in 3 years. See ya.
Yep. That's the way it goes. He lost the clubhouse. You know, he was screwing the girl over there and whatever, you know. We'll make up excuses until he's gone, really, is what happened, you know. So, but no. That's the way it goes, you know. So anyways, well, thank you for calling in. We appreciate it. And maybe we'll have you on again soon. You never know.
Hey, love to be back. Thanks, Pat. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Chris. See ya. So our next caller in is Jamie. Jamie, welcome to the show, and what's your question?
All right. What's going on, Pat? Thanks for having me on. So yeah. I wanted to talk about the NFL playoff picture. I know you're a big Pats fan. You know, you guys know I'm not a Pats fan because I didn't grow up here. I wish I did, so I wouldn't have to be a Redskins fan. But so we got the AFC and the NFC. Let's talk the AFC first because I think it's a little clearer picture. At the top, obviously, of the Patriots. Then you got the Steelers. And then I think after that, let's call them like tier A. Those are kind of like the favorites, obviously. I think below that, you've got maybe one or two options who are a little bit of a wild card. They could be a good playoff team, maybe not, maybe a little unproven. And that's obviously the Jaguars and the Chiefs. And then I think you've got two wild cards who right now it's going to be the Ravens and the Titans. We'll see if it stays that way. Let's assume that it does. How do you see that all playing out? I know I personally say if the Patriots keep home field advantage, which looks likely, especially with the Steelers losing Antonio Brown for a few weeks, everyone knows you don't bet against those guys playing playoff games in Foxborough. So I think you can kind of pencil them in. But how do you think that rest of that AFC picture shakes out if it stays the way it is right now?
Well, so here's the tough part about that. I think Jacksonville is, you know, arguably the second best team in the conference, definitely the third best team in the conference for sure. I just think their defense is so freaking good. And that's the other thing about the Ravens. Their defense is really good. Their offense has kind of been resurgent lately. They're the one, you know, the Ravens are really the only team that really kind of scares me. And that sounds kind of silly to say, but they're not scared of coming in here and playing. And right now as the five seed, they'd be going to Kansas City. And Kansas City has turned around a little bit lately, but they have been a mess the second half of the year. And so really since the first five games, they've been a total mess. And so, you know, you look at it and say, okay, well, if Baltimore can go into Kansas City and win, I think Jacksonville's going to win, and they're, you know, and then they go to Pittsburgh. That means Baltimore comes here. And I think the Patriots are a good team. I think they're better than the Ravens. But, you know, so many times it comes down to a team just crapping their pants when they play the Patriots. And, you know, you saw it happen on Sunday night with the right. Steelers, you know. Right. So,
and Baltimore historically doesn't do that.
Yeah, I exactly.
Think you look at the coaching. After Belichick, I think you probably slot Harbaugh in there as a, you know, probably, you know, obviously Belichick is above everybody else. And yeah. Then below that, I would say Harbaugh probably would be better than maybe Andy Reid at this point, now that Reid's with the Chiefs. But I would say I would agree with you in that respect that Baltimore defense, if they can figure out how to contain Brady,
yeah,
you know, they've got a strong run game. They've got standouts out on every level of the defense.
Right.
They're probably the only defense. I would say Jacksonville as well might pose a problem yeah. to the Patriots, but if you're telling me Tom Brady versus Blake Bortles in the playoffs,
well, that's thing.
Not right. a question. You know?
Right. And so that's really the issue is that, you know, who's going to, and not only that, but I think just because of the Ravens, like you said, you know, like we were saying, you know, they're not scared to come in here. You know, you get Blake Bortles come in here, man, they're going to get the floor. They're going to wax the floor with Jacksonville. I just think they're not mentally prepared to come in here to Foxborough and win. And maybe they surprise us, and they are, but I just look at it and say, I don't know how you could bet on them doing that this year. So, to me, you know, the Ravens are really the only real team I'm concerned with. The Steelers aren't going to come here and beat the Patriots. We own them. You know, they lost, and granted, Brown got hurt, and so we'll see, but, you know, they lost to us already in Pittsburgh. I don't know how they're going to come to New England and beat us in New England in the AFC Championship game. I just don't see it happening. So, you know, we'll see, but, you know, I really think the team I'm worried about the most, as far as Patriots losing to would be Baltimore. And I know it's the first game, but, you know, it's a scary situation when they come in here. If Flacco can turn around and play well and the defense plays well, that's how you beat the Patriots. I mean, you don't need a high powered offense to beat the Patriots. You just need a really good defense, and the Ravens have that. And so don't the Jags. And I think, you know, just mentally the Ravens are more prepared. So I think the Ravens are the biggest test for the Patriots, I think. Provided they can beat the Chiefs, of course. So we'll see. You know, otherwise you get opening night rematch, and I think the Patriots win by like 70 in that game because freaking Andy Reid sucks in the playoffs. So,
well, the wheels have fallen off the bus for the Chiefs. Yeah. They've gotten back on track the past 2 weeks, but they had a 5 or 6.
Well, you know what's interesting about, and I lost you there for a second, but you know what's interesting about the Chiefs is that when Kareem Hunt gets the ball, he's pretty good. It's surprising. I mean, I know after the first five games, maybe we didn't know that already. But, you know, when he gets the ball in his hands, he's like a pretty good player. And then they kind of forgot that for about 7 weeks. And they were like, hey, remember that Hunt guy? Maybe we should give him the ball again. That might work.
Yeah, and you then, don't have to remind me, Pat. I faded in our fantasy league because Kareem Hunt disappeared for 6 weeks.
That is very true. That is very true. A fantasy league in which I started out 1-4 and in the championship, trying to defend my title. So
let's flip to the NFC real quick too. Generally, the same question. I think the NFC is a stronger conference this year.
Yeah.
Overall, you don't have like one or two power teams, and then just kind of a whole lot of what happens after that. You've got four teams there at the top who are all pretty much jockeying for position. Obviously, Philadelphia is going to probably hold on even with the Carson Wentz injury. But after those guys, you've got the Saints, you've got the Vikings, you've got the Panthers now who are still in there. You've got the Rams. All those guys are kind of log jammed at 10-4, 11-3. How do you see that shaping up? I think personally for me, let's say it stays the way it is right now. So Philly's at 1, Vikings at 2. Right now you've got the Saints at 3, and then you've got the Rams in Carolina, and then in that final playoff seed right now, I believe it's the Falcons. We'll see if they hold on. I think they are the best team in terms of holding on to that 6 seed. But you're going to have half those teams playing backup quarterbacks,
right?
Which is amazing. But that just tells you that the teams around them are that good that playing a backup quarterback has basically meant nothing in the NFC this year. So how do you see that shaping out?
Well, it's definitely going to be interesting. I mean, we'll see what happens. You know, the Eagles played the Giants last week and almost lost, and it took Nick Foles winning in a shootout. I don't think the Eagles are going to be able to consistently win with Nick Foles in a shootout. And so if their defense doesn't step it up, they're in trouble. They're in big trouble. I don't think Nick Foles can win you games. But the thing about what other teams like Minnesota has been doing with Case Keenum at quarterback is they haven't been relying on Case Keenum to win games for them. And I know, you know, Case Keenum's numbers have been really good, and they have been, but you know, a lot of times it's about what you're expected to do. You know, he's not Tom Brady, so we're not going to expect him to go out and win games for us. What we are going to expect him to do is go out and manage the game and play good quarterbacking and don't make any stupid mistakes. And, you know, you don't have to be slinging the ball over the field, but you just got to make good decisions. And Case Keenum's done a really good job of doing that. They haven't asked him to do too much. And I think if you can do that with Foles, you can still be successful because that's a really good Philadelphia team. I just don't know if they can do that, to be honest with you. So that'll be the question. I think, Jesus Christ, I mean, that freaking conference is loaded because all six of those teams, you could make an argument for all six of those teams in the Super Bowl, right? The Saints, typically the Saints are an indoor team and indoor teams don't travel very well, right?
If they got However, I agree with you, but the Saints have typically been an aired out team.
Exactly.
They're a run first team this year, and that two-headed monster running back can pound you, and if you stack the box and commit yourself to stopping the run, you don't have Case Keenum to worry about. You got Drew Brees.
Right. Well, and that's really the biggest thing, right, is that, you know, defense and running travels, and their defense has been really good this year, and their running game has been unbelievable this year. And so, you know, with those two guys, they can really kind of go anywhere. And so, you know, you definitely got to worry about them. You certainly have to worry about the Rams. I think the Rams are just a really solid team. And then you look at, you know, you get Carolina, who, you know, we'll see what happens. If they choke in the playoffs or not, who knows? And then, you know, but they got Olsen back, so that's a big get for them. And then you get Atlanta, and Atlanta, as crazy as it sounds, Atlanta's played really well. And not only that, but they played really well in, like, clutch, crunch time moments when it was, like, you know, the game's on the line and they're winning these close games. Now, to me, I look at Atlanta, and I don't know if they can hold on to it all year long. Just because if you look at the first few games of the season, they had the Golden Tate play where it looked like he was in the end zone. They called it a touchdown, but there was 8 seconds left. And with the 10-second runoff rule, they didn't get a chance to run another play. So they lost that game. Jordan Howard was wide open in the end zone. Nobody within 10 yards around him. He drops the ball. So they win that game. So it's like, you know, they've won a few games that they probably had no business winning because the other team just blew it. But then again, the Patriots have a few games like that too, and that's really just what good teams do. And so it's really kind of a question of, you know, how can they play once they're in that situation? And you won't know until you get there. And again, that's another team that plays good defense and has a good running game. So, you know, theoretically, yes, they're a dome team, but, you know, they can still play outside. The one thing I will tell you is that Minnesota will 100% definitely not make the Super Bowl. Not for any reason other than the fact that a Super Bowl team has never hosted at home, and that streak is not getting broken this year, and so Minnesota will not make the Super Bowl just because of that reason.
That's a piping hot take, Pat.
You like that, right?
That's a piping hot take. I hear what you're saying, but I also know that of all those defenses in the NFC, I would probably put the Minnesota one the best because right. they don't have a weakness.
Sure.
Their D-line gets to the quarterback. Their linebackers are sideline to sideline, and their DBs are all Pro Bowlers. After Minnesota, I'd probably put the Rams D.
Yeah.
But again, this is going to be Jared Goff's first time in the playoffs. He looks great. He has made a exponential jump this year between his rookie season and what he looks like this year. But for me, if I'm penciling it in, you're saying, Jamie, you got to pick right now. I'm going to pencil in Patriots, and I'm going to pencil in the Saints because I feel like you get in the playoffs with that Saints running game, that Saints D, you know, you're picking your poison. Are you going to commit to stopping the run? And if you do, by the way, you've got a Hall of Famer slinging the football. You commit to stopping Breeze, and he's just going to hand off to those two-headed monsters right. back there, and they're going to put 200 rushing yards on the board against you.
Well, and how crazy would it be if, you know, if that's the matchup and the Patriots wax the floor with them in week two, and how different is that Saints team now than what it was in week two? I mean, they were 0-2. People were talking right. about, you know, is Breeze done? And, you know, what are they going to do? And that team's a mess. And they just turned it around. They figured out something on the defense, and their running backs have just been ridiculous. And I think the Patriots game is the first time they actually started using Kamara a little bit more. And yeah. they just looked at him more like, what are we doing? Like, we have to use this guy a lot more. And they've done – I think they've done what Atlanta has done, but I think their running backs are more talented. Now, I don't know if Ingram is more talented than Freeman, but I will say that Kamara, I think, is more talented than Tevin Coleman. I don't think that's a stretch. And so to me, I think, you know, you have more talented guys doing the same type of thing with a really good quarterback like, you know, like the Falcons have. You know, and so the Saints are just doing it. I mean, they're just killing it. And the Saints, they're just turning around so much. Lattimore has been unbelievable at 11. You know, he was the number 11 pick this year. He's been fantastic on defense. So
that he has defense yet really to give up a touchdown pass in his rookie season.
It's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
And I think if you look at the Saints' schedule, the game for me that really sticks out as a major kind of focus, if I look back and say this is where they really turned it on and kind of opened up your eyes to say, hey, look, this isn't just a – You know, because the Saints always go on runs. They'll finish the season 8-8, but somewhere in there they had a 5-game winning streak. They're right. that team that always puts it together and just can never get in.
Yeah.
Partly because it was always the Drew Brees show, and they never had a defense.
Right.
And they never had a running game. You know, right. they would give the ball to Ingram 15 times, but Brees would throw it 45 times.
Right.
I think that game against the Redskins, where the Redskins kicked them around the field for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And then somewhere along the line there in the fourth quarter, Breeze comes alive. They turn the ball to Breeze and say, okay, the running game's not working. The defense let us down today and gave up 31 points. Breeze went, I think it was 14 straight completions in the fourth quarter. And inside of there, there's two touchdowns. I mean, you're talking about a team, the Redskins had it beat. You know, they had stopped the run, they'd stopped the pass, and then just suddenly you're talking about a Hall of Famer going to his team and saying, hey, guess what, guys? Get on the bus.
Right.
We're going to win the game. And I think if you come down to it, as just a fan, you know, my team's not going to make it, obviously. As a fan, I would love a Brady Breeze matchup.
That'd be awesome, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Just like, you know, an old school shootout. You know, a first 1-45 wins. The last thing I want to see is a defensive battle in the Super Bowl. So
yeah.
I want to see two quarterbacks who are going to throw the ball.
Yeah, that'd be fun. I mean, they, you know, people are talking about Brady Rodgers before the season, and if it ends up Brady Breeze, who the hell saw that one coming? Nobody had New Orleans even winning that division. I think when we picked it, we had New Orleans as the worst team in that division. I think most people had New Orleans as the worst team in that division. You know, a lot of Tampa's just been terrible. But, you know, a lot of people thought Tampa was going to take that next step. They won 9 games last year. We thought, you know, Tampa's going to win 10, 11 games. And, you know, Winston's going to take the next step. And they've been awful. And, you know, you could have 3 teams from the NFC South make the playoffs. And... you know, and then who knows what happens once they all get in and they're all good enough to really make a run. So it'll certainly be interesting to watch. But I think it's a good call. I mean, Breeze getting in there and the Saints winning, I think is definitely not a stretch, I would say. So we'll see.
So, so that was my question. I appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming on. We really appreciate it, Jamie. And maybe we'll talk to you again soon. And yeah, I know, you know, maybe next time Mike will be here and you guys can wallow in your sorrows as Redskins fans together. So
next time I won't be in bed. Maybe I'll put on a shirt.
Well, that'd be nice. You know, but the view's not bad, so. All right, man. See ya. All right, so hope you enjoyed the episode today. Thought it went really well. Thanks again to Phil Perry for coming on. Really nice of him. Thank you to all the listeners that called in and talked with me for a little while. It was a lot of fun. So really, really enjoyed it, and I hope you enjoyed it as well. I do want to give also a shout-out to M.Dot and Core, who give our outro music. And so, again, M.Dot is on Instagram and Twitter, at M-D-O-T-Boston. He's also on iTunes and Spotify as well. His latest album is Ego and the Enemy. Great album. You should check it out on iTunes. And Core is at Core of EMS, and Core is with a K, so it's K-O-R-E of EMS, and he's on Twitter, so check him out. We really appreciate them hitting us with the outro music there. And for us, you can find us on iTunes and really anywhere that you can find podcasts, so whether it's on Overcast or Stitcher or any of those other ones, but iTunes is really the big one. If you give us a 5-star review and review us, we'll work on getting some stuff. So we really appreciate it if you do that. We are available on iTunes, like we said, and anywhere else. Okay, on Instagram, we did create an Instagram account at Weekend War, but it's the same. Our Instagram is the same as our Twitter handle and email address. We also have a Facebook account as well. So it's Weekend Warrior Podcast. You want to look us up on Facebook and like the show on Facebook. We do send out all of the shows from there as well. So our Instagram and our Twitter and our email are all the same. They are Weekend War Pod with no E's. Okay, so the email is weekendwarpod@gmail.com. And again, no E's, so it's WKNDWARPOD@gmail.com. Instagram and Twitter are the same, at Weekend War Pod. Again, no E. So it's at WKNDWARPOD. All right. So shoot us an email. Shoot us a tweet. Really appreciate it. Or perhaps, maybe, just maybe, you're asked to take over for a drunk playing Santa Claus at Macy's department stores. And you do such a great job. And, eventually you do such a great job that you start calling yourself Kris Kringle and you refer to yourself as the actual Santa Claus. And people get a little upset, a little worried about that. And so worried, as a matter of fact, that they decide they're going to commit you to Bellevue. Okay. And just when you think that you've lost hope, okay, just when you think that message of love and that message of the holiday season won't get out, that we step in. Okay. We will be your Fred Gailey. We will step in for you. And we will fight for you. We will make sure that everyone understands that message that you're trying to get out to everyone. Okay, we will do that for you. Okay, so you stick with us and we will do that for you. And we will tell people, okay, we will tell people that the holiday spirit is not at Macy's or any other commercial store. It's not even inside of Kris Kringle or Santa Claus. It's inside of every one of us. Child, man, woman, everybody. It's inside of all of us. Okay, we'll get that message out for you. We appreciate you. We really love you. We really do appreciate you. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Have a good week.